Today is June 9th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet.
I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm leaving town. Actually, I'm Ricky Sparrow. To get the full story on what is going on, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/roundup. Brian is with us for the entire show. I'm sabbatical this summer till August, but Brian's here. Hey, Brian.
So we all got together this week to do one last show as a group. We've been planning to pregame for next week's developer conference, but late in the week we got a high-level announcement, or was it a leak, about WWDC?
I don't know.
And I'm expecting the show to degrade into complete chaos, just so everyone's prepared.
And I'm going to be serious for the entire broadcast.
Perfect.
That ought to be interesting.
We've got no idea what's going to happen on this show. But hey, we're going to give it a shot. Let's get into the news.
All right. This week, Sun CEO Jonathan Schwartz announced that macOS 10.5, or Leopard, will sport a new file system, which is called ZFS. It was originally developed for Sun for the Solaris operating system. ZFS, which stands for Zettabyte File System, is an open-source 128-bit file storage protocol. ZFS has no maximum file size and can store billions more files than macOS X's current file system, HFS Plus. ZFS has the ability to use hard disk space more efficiently. It dynamically stripes data across multiple drives and can take snapshots of an operating system and data so users can roll back to previous versions.
Apple has not officially announced that it will be adopting the ZFS file system. Mr. Schwartz indicated the announcement would come during Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, or the WWDC, which is next week. Tech pundits have speculated that Apple was eyeing ZFS to enable Time Machine OS 10.5's, or Leopard, as built-in backup feature. The discussion this week has shifted to how pervasive ZFS will be in Leopard. In particular, will it replace or merely supplement HFS Plus?
So that's the machine fodder this week. What's ZFS? Why is Apple using it? And what impact is this going to have on the Mac? But before we start up the context machine, I need to get something off my chest. Consider this one last shot before I leave town. John Dvorak is a well-known figure by tech writers for saying some silly things. A quick search turned up articles where he suggested, for example, in 2002 that the Mac be put down like an old dog, or in 2006 that Apple was transitioning to Windows away from Mac OS X. And for things like this, Brian has railroaded him several times for factual errors and poor logic. He deserved that, certainly. But this week turned up something different altogether. John Dvorak actually wrote a column where he insinuated that because, quote, no company can have as much good news as Apple, it might be a good idea to sell the stock short. Quick explanation, selling short means you borrow money to sell a stock, then buy the stock at some later date. So if the stock price dropped, you make money. If not, you lose money. So you sell short because you believe a stock is going to drop in price. Now, the problem with selling short is that it is extremely risky. When you buy a stock, the worst thing that happens is the stock price drops to zero and you lose the money you put in. But when you sell short, the stock price can always keep rising, so your potential loss is infinite. You don't sell short unless you have a very well-planned exit strategy if the stock's price starts to rise. So writing an article about how the iPhone won't be as successful as everyone thinks is one thing. Recklessly implying that selling short will be a good idea is a recipe for disaster, and it's wildly irresponsible. I'm astonished, at a minimum, that MarketWatch ever allowed the piece to go to press. So that's it. I'm off the soapbox. Let's get into the context machine.
Do you feel better now?
Oh, I feel way better.
Excellent. All right, so here we go. We are now entering a state of controlled chaos, which is usually called the context machine, and we're going to talk about ZFS And what exactly does that mean, and how it relates to Apple and macOS 10.5 Leopard and the Time Machine feature that's in Leopard as well. So jump in and hold on for the ride.
Yeah. Well, this is so here's my first question. Someone, we got to begin by going over what ZFS is. I mean, we had the kind of boilerplate description, but what is, someone describe for everyone what the point of ZFS is. Why does it exist? What's the point of it?
Okay, I can handle that one. ZFS was created by Sun for the Solaris operating system, which we mentioned a couple minutes ago. The thing about ZFS is that it is amazingly scalable, which the current file systems that are used on in operating systems today are not. So where you have these limitations on the maximum size of your file, the maximum number of files you can have in a folder or on your hard drive, that pretty much goes away for all practical purposes when you switch to ZFS. And it also has robustness built in. So if you're using, say, a server that has multiple hard drives that are all ganged together as a RAID to appear as one hard drive, if one fails, ZFS is robust enough that it can handle that. So that's, you know, kind of in a nutshell, there you go. And Brian, did I get it right?
You pretty much nailed it on the head. I mean, this is a pretty big deal. Any kind of advancement in the file system is always a big deal for any particular operating system, because it's the foundation upon which everything is built, or it's at least a foundation upon which everything calls, however you want to look at it. So, you know, you look at the capabilities of this thing, and it could actually be huge for Apple. It could be huge for them in terms of the corporate market, for, you know, various enterprise applications. It could be a very big deal. And, you know, my real question, of course, is how big a deal was it for someone other than Steve Jobs to announce this? You know, we all know that Steve is a control freak when it comes to news and information coming out of Apple. And, you know, companies have been fired. ATI paid a price for years for accidentally revealing that one of their video cards was going to be in a new system. So yeah,
that was definitely, that caught my eye when it happened. I mean, just the fact that there was what is pretty substantial information about what's going to happen next week, presumably one of these top secret features that Steve Jobs held back at last year's developers conference, came from the Sun CEO rather than Apple. The other thing, I mean, you know, reading what people are saying about this, I just wanted to go back to what you're saying before, Brian, about how ZFS in and of itself is kind of a big deal. When I see people write about it, some people are skeptical of the idea of it being used in OS X, but pretty much everyone says, you know, this is one of the most – file systems are not something where people normally think innovation is happening. And people are saying, you know, ZFS is one of the most interesting things to happen to file systems since they were created. The ones that we use today were conceived, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, you know, another thing that I thought was interesting about the whole announcement was the fact that not only did the Sun CEO let it slip that Apple is switching the file system, he made a point to go back and point it out again. So he kept going back to that. So it's not like it just kind of slipped out. He was making a point to let everyone know what Apple's doing. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, it is very interesting. And, you know, of course, it could have also been a leak that – I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm a big conspiracy theorist, but with Apple going to such extremes to control information, it's certainly within the realm of possibility that Apple wanted this particular news to leak. But at the same time, I just kind of doubt it.
It also seems possible. I mean, one of the things that Apple has been doing very differently in the last few years as opposed to the previous decades in its history, Apple seems to be much better at working in partnership with other companies these days. And I can imagine that, you know, for Sun, it's a really big deal for macOS X to adopt ZFS. And for Apple, it's ZFS won't be so much the point when Steve Jobs talks about it next week. It'll be what you can do with ZFS. You know, it enables Time Machine. It lets us do, we'll talk about
more specifically, he's going to be aiming his message at developers. So it's what developers could do with ZFS.
Right. And so I can imagine that part of the agreement for if they were trying to work closely with Sun in order to, you know, make improvements to ZFS or work on the technology, that one of the agreements was, hey, let me spill the beans on this when I'm talking, because it's going to be a big deal for Sun if we can say, look, we have a new marquee customer.
You know, it really is a big deal for Sun that they've put ZFS out there. So it's essentially an open source thing for anyone to use. And that's really smart, because for Sun, it's more than just having other companies use ZFS. It's about the fact that ZFS is this system that ties back in really well to the servers that Sun is making now. And so Sun really wants to have a lot of companies using this file system, so that then they can turn around and start selling server technology to people, which makes me wonder, are we going to see some type of Apple-Sun collaboration on a future Xserve or Xserve RAID?
That would certainly be Apple's benefit to come up with that kind of arrangement. But, you know, Apple's not really known well for playing well with others.
No, they're not.
It does. I mean, in the spirit of partnership, it would make a lot of sense, since Apple has been so focused on consumer technology, for Apple to look for ways to get other people. For example, if Sun were going to start selling machines with Mac OS X on them, which seems impossible. But, you know, I'm imagining the scenario where Apple says, let's try and get OS X server out there and into, you know, big businesses. But we don't want to deal with big businesses. That's not kind of how we roll.
Ricky,
yeah,
put the pipe crack down.
Yeah, I know.
The crack pipe.
I knew that was coming.
The pipe crack or the crack pipe?
Both. It could be either at this point.
Indeed, it could. Now, another thing to take a look at, though, for the collaboration. You know, Apple is so not into collaboration with other companies, but we have this
Apple barely tolerates collaboration with its customers.
Well, that's true. But we have the iPhone coming out, and they had to do some serious collaboration with AT&T to get that to happen.
So, fair enough, but it's the kind of collaboration that no other company has been able to get done. It's collaboration that mostly leaves all the control in Apple's hands.
That is true. Now, on the other hand, one of the things that I have playing in the back of my head, we haven't talked about this at all on this show, but the interview with Steve Jobs and Bill Gates at the D conference,
the
All Things
Fest.
Digital, where Steve Jobs said of Microsoft that the thing, or Bill Gates, that the thing he had done best, that he learned from him, this was toward the end of the interview, was collaboration. That he was saying Microsoft has been so good about building partnerships in the industry, and we haven't been good about that. So I have kind of playing in the back of my head that may be changing at Apple.
You know, it could be. I think it would be good for both Apple and the Mac platform, and you know, maybe even the iPod platform, if that were true. But, you know, pardon me for waiting until I see the pudding with a spoon, and, you know, and it tastes really good, and I'm looking at it, and I'm holding it in my hand, and it's just not going to vanish away in a puff of, you know, smoke.
Pudding.
Yeah, you got to be skeptical. Should we talk a little bit about application here, about why some of the particular specifics of why ZFS is showing up now?
We probably should. Yes. Okay. So one of the big things that I see coming out of ZFS, besides the fact that we can now have Macs that are uber computers with insane amounts of storage, is that we can also start dealing with the snapshot thing. And the snapshot feature in ZFS allows the computer, instead of taking the original file and working directly with it, when you open a document, it in essence opens a copy and works with the copy, leaving the original file intact, which now becomes a snapshot of something that happened in the past, which should sound surprisingly similar to Time Machine.
And yeah, the, dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, just dun.
A technical thing, and then reading about ZFS specifically, the way they talk about it is that whenever a file gets written, so you open an application, you start working with it, and you say save, it gets written. Normally what happens in, for example, HFS Plus, the file gets written over the previous location of the file. In ZFS, it writes the file to a new location. And so the old location is still there, and it keeps track of where all the old stuff is. And Brian, I'm curious. I'm not sure. I've heard you talk, certainly not on this show, I've read some of the stuff you've written about it. But I'm curious to hear you talk a little bit about Time Machine and generally the impact that you think it's going to have.
Time Machine. First of all, you know, holy storage stocks, Batman. Secondly, I think that the Time Machine is going to have boy, talk about catching me flat on my feet. There's an edit button here, right? You can go click. You can, like, click a button and then it kind of cuts stuff out. I really hadn't thought about Time Machine at all coming into this.
Well, it's been since what? Since last June, probably, right?
Yes, and that's an eternity in my mind.
And just so you know, I haven't learned Ubercaster well enough yet to find where that little place is where I can cut audio out.
That's okay. We'll do it like they do in the comedy shows. We'll say, hey, we'll edit that part out. And then that part's always in and it's a joke and everyone laughs.
Time Machine could basically be a just a fantastic tool that everybody really loves, and you know, no more lost files and everything's really groovy, or it could get ignored by most people. I think it's probably at this point, I think it's probably going to be more towards the latter. I think that a lot of people aren't going to, you know, quite know what to do with Time Machine, even though it's going to be a great feature. But it's certainly going to have some applications that that can be used in specific places for specific things that are quite important to, you know, vertical industries, niche industries, to certainly to creative professionals, possibly again in the enterprise market, although it's not really being packaged for corporate use. It's really, you know, it's got much more of a consumer look and feel to it, but to me it feels like it's a step forward in terms of file management, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens. You know, it's going to be really interesting, you know, how much storage space this is going to take, that sort of thing. And you know, again, this is where ZFS might come into play, but you know, storage we may actually be back to the point where we need more storage than our machines come with.
You know, yeah, that's a good point. And coming from the background I have in the graphic arts and design end of the Mac community, okay, I deal with Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, Quark Express. I deal with all these applications all the time. And the thing that I'm actually a little worried about right now is what happens when Adobe updates Photoshop CS5 or whatever it's going to be at that point to really take advantage of ZFS, and I'm suddenly having to open 5 terabyte files to work on a graphic.
Well, but it's probably not going to, you know, it won't be that way. It's gonna make sense, or it simply won't be used. I mean, you know, I think that the marketplace will take care of any such issues. And besides, the one thing I think we can count on when Adobe CS5 comes out is that somehow miraculously Go Live will use yet more functionality.
You know, and Go Live did just come out. Version 9 came out on Friday.
It did.
With
it
more
did.
Functionality. It did.
Yes, I'm sure that there are going to be some features that have for some reason been stripped out of that, even though it's supposed to be an upgrade.
Well, actually, if you look close at it, it's now a stepping stone to Dreamweaver CS3. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of off our beaten path. I'm more interested in what's actually going to happen to the file sizes, especially if we get sloppy coders that think, well, it doesn't matter because I can have a file size now that's bigger than I can comprehend, so whatever. So
yeah,
hopefully
there are,
we won't have that.
It's talking about some, since we're kind of on this, we can talk about some of the caveats. I mean, when people complain about this stuff, the stuff people are writing, one of the issues is that it's simply more complex. And I think, Brian, this is related to what you were just saying, that it's the way it stores files, the way it manages your data is not something people are used to, and it'll take some adjustment time. And it depends critically on how effortlessly it's implemented and how well people know that it's there and are using it.
And, well, we can probably I say this, and I guess that there, I'm sure there's a caveat somewhere, but I have strong confidence that it is going to be implemented well. I think that the product that we're going to be given is going to be quite well. That second part about, you know, how accessible is it? That'll be the real issue. I mean, how many people are going to know that because they lost that homework or that letter to Aunt Jean Matilda somewhere, that they can go find it via Time Machine? That'll be the real side, the education side. You know, and a lot of times Apple drops the ball after they release a product or a technology and, you know, and really pushing it. I mean, look at .Mac, which is, I think, is a fine example of that, where it's once it was released, it seems to have gotten little or no attention. There's been other technologies that have come out of Apple, too, that, again, you know, just they kind of get ignored once they get released.
Let's talk a little bit more about .Mac. There was this hint that Steve Jobs dropped again in this D interview where he said, look, we haven't done enough with .Mac. I agree in response to a question. He said, I agree with you. We haven't done enough with .Mac and we're working on it. And the things that people tend to talk about have to do with iPhone integration, which we could talk about. But the thing I wanted to ask about specifically is how many I guess just by vote among the three of us, who thinks that it is possible or likely that eventually, if not next week, eventually we're going to see .Mac as an online backup solution where you can get your data backed up on, you know, world-class servers redundantly so that you don't need to worry about, you know, your external hard drive frying.
So you're talking about more than just the built-in backup feature for .Mac, something that's far more robust than what we have today, right?
Yeah, something that uses Time Machine, where Time Machine, rather than just backing up to an external hard drive, is backing up to servers.
That question is much more suited to issues of the pipes, or the tubes, as the famous congressman.
All those interweb tubes?
Suggested. Yes, all the interweb tubes with the dump trucks. How many of them can get to and from your computer, and how fast can they go?
Yep.
And because, you know, like I just reset up my desktop machine again, and I've got 60 gigs and I've got about another 100 gigs of stuff that I haven't bothered to put on it yet from my backup drive. And I don't care how fast Google servers are, 160 gigs back and forth across the entire web is going to take a long time.
Yeah, you're going to need a bigger dump truck, Brian.
A much bigger dump truck, and I'm certainly not alone in having, you know, accumulated data from years and years and years with, you know, all manner of things that we keep, and whether or not we need them all is another issue. I don't think that this is an issue of the back end, because I think it can all be done on the back end now. It's really an issue of pipe size, and
that's an issue
that Google and Apple have no control over.
Well, and I feel like the counter argument to that, such as it is, and it has its limitations, is that most of the stuff that you back up just once. And, you know, how many times? Sure, I have emails from the last 10 or 12, 15 years, whatever it is. But it's, you know, how many of them do I change on a regular basis? Not that many. Or how many, you know, songs do I add or delete regularly? And I know that there are people that do that with large files, but for the average user, the broadband connection, yeah, you might need to let it back up overnight or over 2 days the first time, but then the incremental backups should be faster.
Well, that sort of thing I think will come at some point. I just honestly I don't think we're all that close to that sort of thing happening yet. I don't think we're going to see that at this WWDC, not that particular feature at least.
So instead, what we'll have is a great opportunity for the Apple salespeople in your local Apple store to upsell you to buy your Mac and an external hard drive so that you have a place to back up all this extra stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the one other thing, just a technical aspect of ZFS that some people might care about. I didn't realize this immediately, but one of the things that ZFS allows you to do is it allows you to implement RAID, redundant array of independent disks. It's various solutions for either speeding up access to data or for redundantly storing data so that if one drive fails, the data is on other drives. And you can do all of that based on the way ZFS is implemented. in software, so you don't need to buy a RAID card. If you have multiple drives in your machine, you can just do that, which seems pretty sweet. If that were just available, if I could slide another hard drive. And
software RAIDs are available now for what we have. I mean, there's not going to be anything different in ZFS unless it's doing it in a better way.
Well, and presumably it's lower level and faster and built into the operating system and hopefully, you know, made slick. But point taken.
Thanks.
All right. So now my next question for everyone is, how about the transition from HFS Plus to ZFS? I mean, that's probably going to be a monumental task.
It is, but I this is another situation where I'm confident that Apple's not going to do this unless they have found some way to make it as seamless as possible for the customer. Too many, you know, Apple does a lot of business in the graphics world. And the last thing that they're going to want to do is alienate anyone because Leopard doesn't play nice with Tiger. Or for that matter, I mean, quite frankly, it doesn't play well with, you know, Panther or the Alley Cat. What was the one before?
Jaguar.
Jaguar, yes, that's it. If it doesn't play well with earlier versions of Mac OS X, they're going to lose business. And that's business that they're not in any position to just write off. So if this happens, if it is the only file system for Leopard as opposed to an optional file system, it will play nicely with those other with older versions of Mac OS X.
That does seem likely. And I mean, the history judgment is when you look at things like the classic emulation layer, the Rosetta emulation layer, and the other transitions that Apple has
made. Sure. Well, look at Boot Camp. Boot Camp will repartition your drive without you losing any data. That's no walk in the park.
No, definitely not.
They're studs.
They are studs, and you know they're and they do pretty much still work on this idea of giving technology to people in such a way that the technology is not in their face. And I think that, like I say, if we see the system, it's more than likely going to work. When is the last time that Apple failed to execute the cube? Let me rephrase that. When is the last time since Steve Jobs came back that Apple has completely failed to execute? I mean, we've got these little things that we just talked about, like dropping the ball on .Mac, and certainly they've dropped the ball here and there on little things. But most of the things that they've actually set out to do, they've accomplished.
Yeah, and the things that are critical to the functioning of the business have, by and large, like you're saying, in my memory back to the cube, they've all been there. They've been solid products, even if they haven't sold wildly. You know, things like Airport Express didn't change the world, but you know, they were solid products and they delivered what they promised.
It changed the world for some people.
Fair enough.
All right. So have we hit enough of this, or?
I think we have. The only other thing we can talk about, and you know, if we want to take about 30 seconds, is to talk about what else we might expect to come out of WWDC.
I think that sounds like a brilliant plan.
I'm curious what you're looking for, Brian. You're the man in the room for these things.
Yes, I was actually recently attending a board meeting with Steve and the boys, and they were, you know, updating me on their plans.
Were you bringing the coffee?
On a more serious note, I think that we're going to basically have most of the time spent with the unannounced, unreleased features in Leopard. And I think that that's going to be the big focus. Steve has done a great job of making the WWDC keynotes be about the developers, and I don't expect anything to change here. I really don't expect a new hardware. I saw some rumor this week on updated iMacs, and that to me doesn't belong at a developer conference, and I would be really surprised if we saw that unless it was some kind of product that Apple felt was going to light sales on fire, in other words, to show developers that they're growing the market. And, you know, let's face it, a new iMac, is it going to do that? So I think that the big focus is going to be just all the other stuff in Leopard that we haven't already seen.
You know, I have to agree.
That's with the iPhone coming up. And, you know, in the PowerBooks just recently released, I don't think this is going to be an earth-shattering event in terms of new announcements, except for new features in Leopard.
Yeah, I mean, the only other developer-centric things that I can think of that could conceivably be subjects for a keynote at WWDC would be development on the iPhone. And it seems like just a couple of weeks before the release of the product, they wouldn't open that can of beans. They'd just, you know.
They won't, because they're not letting developers develop for the iPhone. The iPhone is not for developers.
Well, there is, you know, Steve Jobs cracked the door again in this All Things Digital interview, said, you know, we want to do it. We're going to get there eventually, but we're not doing it.
This is the same Steve Jobs that once lamented that the only thing wrong with making a computer was needing third-party developers. He finally has his lock. You know, I mean, and it's, I think they should open the iPhone to third-party developers to let the development community fill all the holes that Apple is not going to see, recognize, or understand, because that is the nature of a free market. The holes get filled. I think they should do that. I don't think they're going to do it. And we won't hear much, if anything, on the iPhone unless it is a change in that policy.
If they open up the iPhone to developers, I think it would be a runaway platform. They wouldn't be able to make enough units. Everyone would wait in line all the time to get their new iPhone.
Yeah. And if they do it, I mean, it would be huge. And of course, that would be announced at the WWDC. Absolutely, that's where it would be announced. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's no way it'll happen right now. I do have the sense, I really do, when I think about it, that Apple is moving away from that extreme xenophobia that it's had in the past, maintaining at the same time that extreme control over the experience. And I get the sense that they're balancing it at least better than they were before.
Maybe, and certainly in some ways, but I think that the iPhone, the fact that as of right now it's not open to developers is a big testament to where the company stands on this issue. Everything but Apple's control would benefit from opening the iPhone to third-party developers.
I agree with that.
Every single aspect of it would be good. People could make money. It would be a huge platform. It would be a big deal. But Apple wouldn't be able to control it.
All right. And on that note, I think it's time to move on, because I'm just so itching to play another one of our little riffs. If you have any comments you want to add about our little discussion, go ahead and give us an email. That's roundup@macobserver.com. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
Our content is written by the Mac Observer staff. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO, and that's all I've got.
And that's all I've got, too, at least for the next couple months. Hey, keep the trains running, gents.
Yeah, we'll see how well that works out, and good luck. And for everyone that's playing along at home, stay subscribed.
Yep, definitely. We'll see you next week. Let your friends know about this podcast, and see you then.